Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. The Big Four at Four.
Big Four at Four.
Four at Four.
Four at big four. Blockbuster stories that you need to hear.
Big Story One.
I have already signed the emergency proclamation to declare that there is an imminent threat on having too many migrant releases into our community, and it's above our capacity as a community to sustain.
And that is Yuma Mayor Doug Nichols. He says, you know what? It is time for a declaration of emergency because of all the central immigrants that are coming in to Yuma. So in the Yuma area, there's like a population of 200,000 people. Border Patrol in Yuma had 950 migrants in detention yesterday. They have about, 400 places for them to sleep at any given time. It's just too much. They don't have the facilities. They're processing too many migrants, mostly families and minors. They've been doing this, since last September, and it's only getting harder and harder. And the Yuma sector is apparently spending, $100,000 a month in humanitarian supplies like diapers and baby formula. So it made the Yuma mayor say, it forced the Yuma mayor to say, we need help. And now they're looking for, I guess, something from the federal government that says, we'll try and help you out.
Yeah. And what's interesting is this all happened during, and coincidentally, this happened during our special series, Arizona's Immigration Crisis. The border mayor of Yuma said, I need more help. Now, what does that look like? We're not really sure. But let's talk to Peter Seymour, KTAR news reporter, who has been down in Yuma. You've met the mayor, Doug Nichols. You've talked to people at the border. What did you see as far as, the amount of cost, the amount of people, the amount of necessities? What did you observe?
Well, I heard the stories from all those parties, and I also saw that we were on the brink of all these releases. So when I was in Yuma, I got a tip from Border Patrol that the migrants were about to be released. Got that same tip from the Yuma County Sheriff, Leon Wilmot, and they were saying, we already know we can't handle this. We already know our shelters don't have the capacity, especially even for our homeless population. We know that we don't have all the supplies and resources in this community to handle them. So they waited for 2 days after I left to release the migrants for the first round. And now it's up to 1,500 migrants released, according to Sheriff Wilmot, mostly in Yuma, some in Blythe nearby. So I could see the strain on their faces. I could see that they're getting ready for a struggle and having to deal with these migrants on the streets, because now they're looking at, either if they don't feed them and clothe them, they're going to have to deal with them being homeless.
Explain release. When you say that they're anticipating a release, is that from custody of being vetted, or is that being they're going to be released from somebody across the border and they know they're coming into the country?
No, that's after they've been vetted. This is
okay.
This
so
is,
these are the 90% that pass that fear test or whatever.
Yeah.
That get to stay, and then they are released where?
It could be anywhere in the city. I was told.
Wow.
I was told it was going to be City Hall that day when I was there back on March 27th, and it didn't happen that day. But I think a few days later it did, and they can be released outside of bus stations, because Greyhound bus lines won't let anyone without tickets into their lobbies, so they have to have transportation arrangements made beforehand. It could be anywhere in the city, parks, or really what they aim for is these nonprofit shelters, whether it's Phoenix, Tucson, Yuma, or anywhere else. And if the shelters can take them, great. These are churches, these are volunteer organizations, and if they can't take them, well, they've got to try to take them somewhere else.
All right, this is the Big Four at Four. Mac and Gatos, we bring you four big blockbuster stories to start the 4 o'clock hour. And Big Story One, we're here with KTAR news reporter Peter Seymour. And so when the migrants come over, or when they are released, from wherever they're vetted and all that kind of stuff, let's say in Yuma, because we're kind of talking about Yuma, they trickle into other communities like Phoenix. Phoenix can't really handle this kind of thing. We're going to talk to, in about 15 minutes, some pastors from churches that pay hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Out of their own pocket
to try and get the migrants food and clothes. Is that what you saw when you were down there? You saw the migrants, okay, they get released, and then, ICE will drop them right here in Phoenix.
That's pretty much how it goes until they can get transportation options going. So these volunteer organizations are even coordinating that. So there's one group that would give prepaid cell phones out to make sure they're able to stay in touch with their family and friends or sponsors in this country to track them, make sure they're okay as they're going along the way from Phoenix to wherever. It could be California, Tennessee, North or South Carolina, anywhere but here. And then they just get, you know, make sure they get basic health care treatment. Some of them come with some funguses, unfortunately. Some
or maybe lice.
Or maybe lice or yeah. even, you know, broken limbs from jumping fences, jumping the wall, you know, getting tripped up on wires at the border.
Flu, measles. All
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Are they given a physical? Are they actually evaluated for everything?
Medically?
Yeah, medically. Are they given some kind of, okay, you don't have a temperature, you do have some fungus, you do need to take the... Do they get some kind of evaluation, or is it hit or miss?
They're supposed to get evaluation, because once the Border Patrol takes them into custody, they give them an initial medical screening. And just like I discovered in the Yuma sector, that if the migrants need more care than that, well, then the Border Patrol agent must drive that person to the local hospital, is Yuma Regional Medical Center, and they sit with them until they're medically cleared to go back into detention. Basically, instead of patrolling the border, they are babysitting in the hospital.
Wow. I did not know that.
It was 11,000, and they spent 11,000 hours in the last fiscal year doing just that. And $700,000, maybe it's $800,000 now, that they've spent just in the Yuma sector, just with Border Patrol, on health care for the migrants.
You're listening to The Big Four at 4, Big Story 1. You know, what is the impact of so many Central Americans, over 24,000, being dropped off all around our state? And Peter Seymour is joining us in studio, KTAR News reporter. We're talking about the migrant impact, let's say, in Phoenix. Peter, how likely is it their asylum case will be successful?
Maybe 2 to 10% of the time.
That's it.
That's about it.
So 90% of them get the okay to stay.
Well, to come in, and they wait for the asylum hearing.
Right, and then out of 90%...
Well, you said 2%.
Right, that actually get their asylum status confirmed, right? Like 90% pass that fear test.
So if we go with the timeline, guys,
Go back to that.
They come over the border, and they're vetted, and they're asked a bunch of questions. It's called the fear test.
Right, and 90%
of them pass it.
From what we understand.
Come into the United States.
That's the initial test, by the way. So if you get to court finally, and the earliest time you get to court is a year from now.
And then what happens in court? The percentage is as you said,
Just dropped it. That's where it drops to about 2% of them actually, you know, having legitimate claims.
So almost all of them go home.
Well, they're supposed to.
They're supposed to.
Well, I mean,
if they show up in court.
That's the other thing. And ICE's field director here in Phoenix, Henry Lucero, says, you know, there's really no incentive for them to show up. And he says, and according to his findings, they're not showing up even to their first court hearing, which is at least a year from now because of the backlog of immigration court judges to actually start seeing these cases. So you have a pretrial hearing is what you get when you're, in essence, screened, fear test and what have you. Then you come back and you start the hearing, the case, however you want to term it, if you're trying to equivocate it in the immigration system to the criminal justice system.
All right. Peter, we'll continue to listen as the week rolls on Arizona's immigration crisis. Peter Seymour, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you guys.
Big Story 1 is all about the impact of almost 24,000 Central Americans being dropped off in our state. As we continue with the Big Four at 4, coming up in Big Story 2, a crazed woman wanted to pull off Columbine Part 2. She won't be able to do it now. We'll tell you why in a second.
The Big Four at 4. Big Story 2.
It appears the hunt for Sol Pais has ended. Sources are telling us Pais was found dead at the base of Mount Evans. It appears she committed suicide. She came to Colorado from Florida on Monday with a fascination into Columbine. Her family told the FBI she had come to Colorado. When she arrived, she immediately bought a shotgun. The threat, we're told, is now over.
All right. Mm. It's the 20-year anniversary of Columbine, the first school massacre that most people will consider it the first school massacre.
The modern school massacre, yeah.
You know what? When we talk about school shootings, this is what I always say. The person who goes to shoot the school up always ends up committing suicide.
Yeah.
Not always. I shouldn't say that. Most of the
time. Well, yeah, like Parkland.
Most of the time, the coward, yeah. It didn't in Parkland. That guy's still alive. Like,
that's what I mean.
Yeah,
that he survived.
He's alive, yeah.
Adam Lanza.
Dead.
Yeah.
And let's not mention any names, but usually these school shooters go and kill people and then cowardly kill themselves.
Correct.
And what I always say is, hey, why don't you stay home and just shoot yourself? Why don't you kill yourself before you go and kill everybody else? Maybe that's what happened in this case.
Well, it seems like that's what did happen, that the person offed themselves outside of of Denver.
Instead of murdering dozens of kids, just kill yourself then before you do it.
What baffles me is because I have a friend who works in Denver at a radio station who is airing a 20th anniversary
of Columbine
this Saturday.
Right.
And people are still healing from that.
Oh, yeah.
This girl, she's 18 and flew from Florida to Denver and bought a pump action shotgun.
Right.
What kind? And I feel for her. I really do. I don't understand her. How do you become that fascinated at 18 of trying to recreate the horror that somebody at Columbine or those guys at Columbine did? I mean, there's just something really disturbing about it. And fortunately or unfortunately, she's dead. So she can't pull it off. But just the fact that she wanted to do it, and it was such a threat that Denver area schools were shut down or put on lockdown.
Right.
I mean, my goodness, what was going through this girl's mind a year or so ago? She's 18.
You're listening to Big Four at 4. We'll bring you four big blockbuster stories to start the 4 o'clock hour.
The Big Four at 4. Big Story 3.
Experts are certainly asking, while the structure looks fairly solid, the heat, the smoke, and the blaze could have affected the mineral composition of the stone that we can see on the outside. Anything from 2 years to 5 years for the rebuild.
So they're talking about rebuilding Notre Dame that burned, not to the ground, but a lot of it burned just a couple days ago. They're saying it'll look different. They've got almost $1 billion or maybe even over $1 billion to repair it. But are they going to make it look exactly the same? Because that's what people want.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do it.
That is the core issue here. The prime minister upended, they said, expectations. I love the way the French translate this stuff. Upended expectations. After he announced that France would launch an international competition for proposals to replace the iconic spire that collapsed on Monday. They've got $1 billion.
Yeah.
Just rebuild it the way it, you know, architecturally, rebuild it the way it was in a modern, with modern materials. Don't screw around with it. Don't change it. Are you kidding? This isn't IKEA. Build it the way it looked.
You're listening to the Big Four at 4.
The Big Four at 4. Big Story 4.
Governor Doug Ducey signing the so-called dry bar bill, calling this a victory for common sense.
A dry bar bill.
Well, isn't that an oxymoron? If I want a drink, why do I have to go to
That's
a dry bar?
That's not what it is. It's when you go get your hair done and they blow dry your hair. A dry
bar. Is that what that is?
Bar, yes.
And well, you and I do not need to use that.
No, it's for women who
there
have a lot
go.
Of hair. Basically, it's about licensing and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and recognizing licenses from out of state.
Ducey signed it. Here's my point. This is what we're working on at the legislature.
Well, there's a lot of women with hair.
Hold on a second. We're not working on trying to get people or forcing or moving people towards getting their kids vaccinated. You know, closing that loophole. We're not working on that. No. We're working on a dry bar bill. We're working on a bill that's going to fine teachers $5,000. They're working on a bill to make the Arizona beverage of choice lemonade. This is all true.
Don't be a hater.
It's stupid. They're not doing anything down
there. And that's why it's getting done. That's why it's being signed. No, it's not controversial. You're not getting a lot of pushback. It's hard. It's hard to change the way people think about vaccinations or texting and driving. That bill seems to have stalled.
Yeah.
Where lemonade and dry bar, blow drying?
Yeah.
Easy.
That's about right for the Arizona legislature. I get it. Okay. That's it for the Big Four at 4.
The Big 4 at 4 with Mac and Gatos. Get the Big 4 at 4 delivered to your phone. Subscribe to the Mac and Gatos podcast on Google Music or the Apple Podcast app.
All right, coming up next, should Valley churches turn their backs on Central American migrants? We're going to discuss that.
Mac and Gatos, a KTAR News special. Continuing coverage of Arizona's immigration crisis.
We're on day three of Arizona's immigration crisis, and interesting questions have come up. Interesting perspectives have come up, that's for sure, and it will continue throughout the week. But something that has interested us and our show for a couple of weeks now, but a couple of months, I should say, is in the immigration crisis, especially for Central Americans. Central Americans are being brought here to Phoenix, being dropped off, and churches are now taking in, or have been taking in, many Central American people, families, so on and so forth. So joining us now is Pastor Ken Heintzelman, Shadow Rock United Church of Christ, and Matt Nutter, Director for Global Outreach for Central Christian Church in Mesa. Gentlemen, thank you two for coming in and sharing some of your time. We know you're very busy with this crisis, so thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So, Matt, why don't we start with you? Because wasn't your church in Mesa one of the first churches in the Valley to have families? And I'll say this again. Families from your church host the migrants in their homes. Do I have that right?
That's right.
Tell us a story about one of the families that said, hey, you know what? I can take a Central American family into my house.
Yeah, when we were first approached to ask to help with this, ICE came to actually a sister pastor of ours, Magdalena Schwartz.
Yeah, we've talked to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. She's doing an amazing job. And we've had contact with her. She reached out to us, said, can you help? We said, I think we have to help in this situation with this vulnerable population. And as we were deciding how do we host these families, the idea came up of actually getting folks in our church to reach out, take them home, and help host them from the time that we see them that night until the time they get on a bus or an airplane. And it's been a remarkable experience for the people from our church.
Can you tell us one specific story that may, you know, touched your heart or, you know, that was particularly hard or tough?
Yeah, every story is a little bit different, but there's a story of one family that took a father and a son home, and they were able to spend the weekend together, and it was over a holiday weekend, and they took people to a park with them. They did celebrations with them. There's a birthday party. They went to the birthday party. This family from our church didn't speak any Spanish, and so all of a sudden you got a language barrier. They reached out to a neighbor that they knew spoke Spanish, had them come over that night, and all of a sudden they're expanding their community of people who are getting involved and helping each other out. At the end of that time, with just tears in their eyes, this family said, it's been such a transformational experience for us to share our lives with these people just passing through.
They
for a
probably
couple days.
Never saw a house that big. They probably never had a birthday party that cool.
It's probably true.
Yeah. That's a touching story. And, you know, these Central American families, a lot of them, you know, a lot of people see them as just numbers and they're over the border and they're you know, they're driving Arizona crazy. But, I mean, there are some people that come over here that do need help. And, you know, we take what we have for granted.
So Valley churches are taking in Central American people, families. This has been going on for a while. I'll be the bad cop. Gatos is going to be the good cop. I'll be the bad cop.
That's a good change, actually.
Yeah. Ken, Shadow Rock United Church of Christ, you have fed and housed migrants for over 5 years now. You've been doing this for a while. Your church has been doing this for a while. When you first started, did you see this continuing for 5 years, maybe even longer? Was that even a possibility? Like, did you know this was going to last a long time, and was it unexpected?
Just to make a distinction, that we have been doing immigration justice for 5 years. Attorneys approached us asking if we would take in individuals that had final orders of deportation so that they could have time to navigate the system to get a legal and administrative remedy for that person so the family could stay together. That's one type of ministry regarding immigration. About 2.5 years ago, then ICE approached us and asked us to host asylum seekers. And this had already been going on for a number of years before mm-hmm. we got involved in it. But the numbers did seem to increase, especially when I think it was 2015, when all the children began to show up, unaccompanied minors
right.
began to show up. And at that point, the model that ICE had preferred was that all the people would be staying in one place. So when we got involved, we were providing hospitality, overnight hospitality and shelter and food and showers and clothing and just, again, an alternative experience of grace and hospitality to those people. So that started about 2.5 years ago.
Does it take an emotional toll on you or the people who attend your church? Either one of you can answer this. Mm-hmm. Does it take an emotional toll because there are just so many and there's so many stories and it doesn't seem like it's solvable or there's an end to it? Does it affect your personal lives?
You can ask my wife.
What does she say? Does she say yes?
She would say yes. And yet we go back and forth between the feeling of being overwhelmed to being overjoyed. We are overjoyed at being able to see families be reunited. We are overjoyed when a small child is traumatized by their experience and they are spoon-fed for 2 to 3 hours by Petra Falcone of Promise, Arizona, and they come out of that trauma, and then they can't take their eyes off their feet because they got new tennis shoes. Mm. And, you know, these are the kinds of experiences of humanity. These are our neighbors that we are told the gospel imperative is that we should love them, and we do.
So you told a story about being overjoyed, but you also mentioned being overwhelmed. Why don't we do this? Let's take a break. Let's come back and talk about money that's going out of your church to the Central Americans, because it costs money to house them or to help them, being overwhelmed. And Mac has said it before, and I don't think Mac said he wants to be the bad guy here.
No.
You said that.
I said I'll play the bad cop.
You'll be the bad guy.
I'll ask the tougher question. I don't want to be the bad guy.
Because I know you have a really, really tough question.
Yeah, I do.
But I think that these two gentlemen would be able to answer it. So that's all coming up. This is part of KTAR's, you know, incredible series throughout this week, Arizona's Immigration Crisis. We've got Pastor Ken in studio. We've got Matt Nutter in studio. He's from Central Christian Church in Mesa. And this is where a lot of the Central Americans come and look for help at these places of worship.
Mac and Gatos, a KTAR News special series, Arizona's Immigration Crisis.
One segment ago, we talked about the Valley churches that are taking in Central American migrants, feeding them, clothing them, and then they go to their prospective place, a relative, a sponsor, somewhere else in the country. And a lot of these places are overwhelmed, as we know that Arizona is being overwhelmed by Central American migrants coming into this country. But then they come to Phoenix and they go to Shadow Rock United Church of Christ, for example, with Pastor Ken Heinzelman, or they go to the Central Christian Church in Mesa. We've got Matt Nutter there. He's the director for global outreach. I asked Pastor Ken about personally, does it take a toll on you? Matt, can you answer that question? Does knowing what we know now about the Central American migrants and just the overwhelming numbers, I mean, does it take a toll on you as far as you doing your job?
It does. I mean, it's a lot of work. And it, like you said, it doesn't end. It's always there. I would say for Central Christian Church, our engagement has been a fraction of what some churches have been. I'm just so impressed by churches that are showing up and taking people day after day, week after week. And I've seen the toll that it takes on people. It can be exhausting on the facility, on the personnel, on the resources, and on and on. One thing I would say on this is that we are all busy all the time, right? Everything's busy. This is a busy week with Easter coming up. There's busy work that is energizing and gets you fired up and going, and then there's busy work that sucks all your energy. When you have a chance to see these people, and it moves from a transactional, you know, you're just giving them something or they taking something, and it moves into something that's along a relational level. You get to meet somebody, you get to hear a story, you see the humanity in them. It moves that needle from being something that exhausts you over into something that can kind of energize you, even though it's still a lot of work.
Okay.
And that's our experience.
Okay, and I totally hear that. But from a fiscal point of view, Can you guys put a number on, like, let's say last year, how much did your church spend on taking care of people from Central America? Do you guys have a bookkeeping number on that?
Pastor Ken, you got a number?
Well, we have estimated that it costs probably $35 to $40 per person when you talk about food, clothes, water, electricity, and then travel bags, because when people get on a bus to reunite with family, then they need to have some food to go across the country. We've established, though, a network where we have churches that are responding at almost major city bus stops, Greyhound stops along the way, so that has helped us as well. I also want to say that the Valley here has been tremendously generous. We've received donations that have offset a lot of those costs for us. So it is not exhausting us financially. But when you get into this ministry, as you do in any ministry, there's always things you probably don't know about until once you get into it.
Right.
And so, then you figure it out.
So we've only got a couple minutes left. I wish we had more time. But the tough question that I have to ask is, do you think you're helping, or do you think you're delaying the inevitable?
Which is what?
Do you think that what you're doing is actually... I know you're helping people on a base level, okay? You're physically helping somebody. But do you think down the road... If you stopped and said, we can't accept anymore, and every church in the Valley did that, then it would have to fall to the government, right?
Would that be the best thing?
Yeah, would that be the best thing for everybody?
You each got about 30 seconds, so go ahead.
Yeah, my take is that as followers of Jesus, he calls us to reach out and to love people in vulnerable situations. And so there could be an argument behind just removing ourselves from it and letting happen what happens and putting that back on the government. I don't feel like we can let that happen as followers of Jesus, that there's a need for us to step in, and this is our opportunity to step in. And this is such a complicated issue. You guys are in the middle of this and even extending your time to realize such a complicated issue that's not going to be solved by churches abdicating our responsibility as followers of Jesus to love the vulnerable population.
All right. That's Matt Nutter. How about Pastor Ken, what do you think?
Well, I agree 110% with Matt that the gospel imperative is clear. How do you love God and you love your neighbor, and you don't separate those two things. And who's our neighbor? It's the person that's in need. I kind of reject the premise of the question, though, in the sense that it's a manufactured crisis. This has been going on for years, if not decades, just from a different part of the globe. So that's one thing. That this is a challenge of logistics. It's a challenge of scale, and we have the resources as a country to deal with this. We just don't seem to have the vision or the will to do it. We certainly have the resources, but until we have the political will to do so, the NGOs and the churches are going to step up, and they're going to be obedient to the call to love and serve.
All right. Yeah, I agree. Pastor Ken, Shadow Rock United Church of Christ. He has fed and housed migrants for over 5 years. Matt Nutter is the Director for Global Outreach for Central Christian Church in Mesa. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for all of your honest answers. And, you know, I think one thing we wanted to do here was just, you know, educate our audience about what is going on with Central Americans as they arrive here in Arizona. They got to go somewhere, and they're going to see you guys, and you guys are helping them on to, you know, the next step. So thank you for joining us, guys. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Thank you.
Happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter. He's risen.
All right, coming up, we've got the 5 o'clock KTAR News Expansion. 15 minutes of commercial-free, nonstop news, traffic, and weather. That's all coming up next.